being BBC Radio Sheffield Monday afternoon with Paulette Edwards, and we're going to have a little bit of this now. So on a Monday, just after midday, we do a bit of body talking where we just talk about a part of the body or a bodily function. Today we're talking about the womb, or maybe the uterus is the word that you use. And here to help me with our questions is gynaecologist Swati Jha, who's also a professor at Sheffield Teaching Hospitals. So Swati, thank you so much for coming in to, well, coming in to being on the line to talk to us about this. Can we talk about the terminology, uterus and womb then? Which would you use as a health professional?
So as a health professional, I would always use the word uterus, but because I sometimes see younger patients, as in under the age of 16, and in order to make it clearer to them, I would use it interchangeably with the word womb, so they understand what exactly I'm talking about. But in all medical context, it would be the word uterus.
What are the main functions then of the uterus, would you say, Swati?
Well, its primary function is reproductive. So every month, under hormonal influence, it builds the inner lining of the uterus, also known as the endometrium, thickens to prepare it for a possible pregnancy. And that starts happening when women go through puberty, basically, from then onwards. If fertilization doesn't take place, i.e. a pregnancy doesn't happen, the lining of the womb is shed, and that is what leads to a menstrual period. If, however, a pregnancy does happen, then the uterus expands and grows to support the developing baby. And of course, during labor and delivery, it plays a very important role, because the uterus is basically made of muscle, which then contracts to help deliver the baby. So its main role is very much reproductive.
Can we just talk a little bit about what it looks like? I've seen a diagram of a uterus. Obviously, I've never seen my own. What do they look like then? How would you describe a uterus?
So if you think of a pear with the upper portion, the wider portion of the pear at the upper end, that's the body of the uterus. And the narrower portion of the pear is what we call the cervix. That's the part that's in the vagina from which women have their smears taken. So the uterus has two parts to it. And again, coming back to the analogy with the pear, the broader portion is the body and the narrower portion is the cervix, which is the part that sits in the vagina.
And how much would a uterus weigh then? I mean, obviously it'll vary. Will it vary depending on the size of a woman, you know, size of the body that's homing the uterus?
Not on the size of the body homing the uterus, but on the basis of other conditions that can affect the uterus. So if somebody, for example, has conditions that enlarge the uterus, things like fibroids, for example, endometriosis or adenomyosis, presence of cancer, then this can cause the uterus to be enlarged. But the size of the body homing it does not influence automatically the size of the womb. And actually, it is very much the weight of a pear.
As small as that?
Oh, yes, very much, it's non-pregnant.
So a 10-pound baby then, in that, obviously the weight of the baby, but is the uterus going to be the same weight despite the size of the baby?
At the point of conception, yes, because the size of the baby isn't influenced by the size of the uterus, it's influenced by the size of the parents and other medical conditions. So, for example, women with diabetes carry bigger babies. But the starting point of all wombs is exactly the same. It's about 150 to 200 grams at the point of pregnancy, and then it grows depending on the size of the baby.
And then after pregnancy, does it just go back to that size then?
It does indeed. It retracts and goes back to its original size, but that can take up to 3 months. But it obviously doesn't stay enlarged unless, again, there is an underlying medical illness making it stay enlarged.
So where is the uterus in my body then? Where is my uterus in my body, Swati?
So it sits really low down in the tummy, in the part of the body called the pelvis. So if you imagine your pelvic bone, it sits inside the pelvis, surrounded by the pelvic bone. And in front of the uterus, you have the bladder. And behind the uterus is the bowels, the rectum and the anal canal, where we pass motions from. So it sits bang between the bladder and the rectum, but very low down in the pelvis.
Let's talk about, you talked about a few things that could, you know, be problematic with the uterus. One of them is menstrual cramps. That's kind of the first time that you maybe notice something maybe not going right. What are the reasons for menstrual cramps then? Do all people with wombs get menstrual cramps?
Pretty much, yes, Paulette. So menstrual cramps are caused because the womb, which, as I mentioned, is a muscle, is contracting to shed its lining. And that has to happen when we have a period. For most women, or a large majority, these cramps will be quite mild. But for others, it can be incredibly debilitating. So it does vary. And there are certain conditions which make this cramping far more painful and more difficult to manage. Conditions like underlying endometriosis, adenomyosis, or even fibroids.
Why would the cramps be stronger then and more painful with endometriosis or these other conditions, Swati?
So what happens with endometriosis is the fact that when a woman is bleeding from the lining of her womb, she's also bleeding internally into areas the blood cannot escape from. And that is what makes the cramps more painful. Again, with conditions like adenomyosis, this is a condition where endometriosis occurs within the muscle wall of the uterus. They're bleeding into the muscles of the uterus where blood has nowhere to go. And therefore, it is more painful with these underlying conditions.
So the blood is building up month after month and it's not going anywhere, it's just staying there.
Pretty much so, yes. And that is what makes it more painful. With these underlying conditions, obviously, yes.
Right. We're going to continue this discussion. So much interesting things. Before we move on, actually, how can those cramps then be managed? You can take painkillers.
Absolutely. Anti-inflammatory, something simple like ibuprofen and paracetamol would be a starting point. Other methods used by women include use of a hot water bottle on the lower part of the tummy. It's important to stay active and practice relaxation if that helps, and for some women it will. If, however, the pain is severe, as with the underlying conditions we've talked about, they may need a more formal medical evaluation and hormonal treatments such as the contraceptive pill or even the coil can help manage these cramps.
Right. And with something like the pill or, you know, a hormonal treatment then, does that mean that the condition goes away or is it just managing the pain? And at what point should a young woman be saying, you know what, this isn't natural? Because I think one of the issues, Swati, is that we don't talk about periods enough, so we've got no comparison with our friends often when we've got these conditions.
Absolutely. And I think that is one of the underlying problems with menstruation. What is normal and what is not? Everybody's pain threshold is different, so it's difficult to know what is normal and what isn't, because you can never compare your symptoms to anybody else. You're only ever comparing them to your own symptoms. Mm. So in answer to your question, when is it okay? Can these conditions be completely eradicated? Not really in young women, because we need the womb to have our babies. So if somebody is having menstrual cramps due to an underlying condition, we are looking at hormonal treatments. When women have completed their family, they've had their babies, then, of course, there are more options available. But until such times, as you say, these hormonal treatments manage the problem. They don't cure the condition.
I'm talking to gynaecologist Swati Jha, professor at Sheffield Teaching Hospital. We're talking about the womb, the uterus. And if you've got any questions that you'd like to throw in, as it were, you can get in touch. Usual numbers. Call us 0800 111 4949. Text us 81333, starting your message with Sheffield.
The Grow Show. We are here.
We being Kat Cam, that's me, and he, Neil Grant,
this is me.
That is you.
Yes.
Your Jasmine's looking a bit worse for wear. What's going on, Dave?
Now, I can safely
say on mental health, that into the works.
Absolutely, yeah.
Ed Sheeran and Azizan, BBC Radio Sheffield. Swati Jha is helping us to talk about, well, we can call it a uterus, we can call it a womb. And Swati, you've made it sound like an upside down pear as well, so can I throw that into the works?
Absolutely, yes.
If it helps us to get our heads around it. I want to talk about hysterectomy next, because obviously that's where you lose your womb for a variety of reasons. But I've got a message here from Michael in Leicester. He wants to know if a hysterectomy can have an impact on mental health.
Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing we need to establish is that a hysterectomy is a very major operation and should not be taken lightly, because it can be associated with significant risks and complications. And as somebody who's been a qualified doctor for almost 30 years now, I can safely say that once upon a time, we didn't have any alternatives to a hysterectomy for a variety of different conditions. So the threshold for performing a hysterectomy was relatively low, but that's changed. We now have medical treatments. We have so many non-invasive treatments that can help and provide a solution to women with different underlying conditions affecting the womb, which don't require a hysterectomy. In answer to the question, can a hysterectomy impact on mental health directly? No, I wouldn't expect it to. But what we have to remember is when women have a hysterectomy at a very young age, it can make them go into the menopause, which is basically where their ovaries stop working as well. And that can impact on mental well-being, but not a hysterectomy per se.
And why would the ovaries, losing ovaries or the ovaries being compromised, why would that have an impact then on mental health? Is it to do with hormones?
Well, absolutely. When we go through the menopause as women, our hormones, estrogen, which is starts to plummet, it starts to fall. And that, I wouldn't say it affects mental health, but mental well-being is slightly different, I feel. Mm. So some of the problems that women encounter around the time of the menopause can impact on their well-being overall, not just mental well-being, but their physical well-being as well. But that isn't a hysterectomy, that's the menopause. So right. I wouldn't say that a hysterectomy would impact directly on mental health.
And there are discussions, I mean, this kind of connects as well with the menopause. If you've not had children, you have to have a hysterectomy. That can have a knock-on effect on just how you feel about yourself and how you feel about your relationship with your fertility.
Absolutely. And those are probably discussions for, you know, for another day, because we could talk about the association of the uterus and generally, you know, general well-being. But we have to remember that we've through the ages, the womb, the uterus has had various cultural and historical periods. So to give you context, the Greek word for womb is hystera, and the term hysteria is actually derived from the Greek word for womb, which is hystera, because it was thought once upon a time in ancient Greek and Roman times that the uterus moved within the body, and this was responsible for emotional distress. This was the concept of the wandering womb. Of course, we know that this is no longer the case, this is not the case, but we're, I'm afraid, stuck with the word hysteria and its origins being from the Greek word for womb, hystera.
Right. And very
so a lot has changed.
Yeah, very briefly before I let you go, because I know you've got to leave in a certain amount of time. You can function perfectly well without a womb or without a uterus after a hysterectomy.
Absolutely. And what we have to remember is there are certain medical conditions where women are born without a womb altogether. They function entirely normally. They go through puberty as normal, but these are conditions where in the absence of a womb, they would not be able to carry a child. Because as we addressed at the very beginning, the sole purpose of the womb is to carry a pregnancy.
Right. So if you're not carrying a pregnancy, you don't necessarily need a womb. Very interesting. Thank you so much. I know you've got to go, so I'll let you go. Gynecologist Swati Jha, Professor of Sheffield Teaching Hospital, telling us a little bit about the function of the uterus, the womb, you can use the words interchangeably, or the upside down pear is what it actually looks like. In size, it's not that big, and it's just under your belly button. I didn't know any of that, and I've got one.